Yes, this here is Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm your host, Amelia Dalton, and I do apologize if I seem a bit distracted today. Between the news about that missing Malaysia air jet, the Big Bang Theory business, and my NCAA bracket, I haven't slept in about 4 days. So, yeah. All right, imagine you're in a startup, and you've got this killer idea, but you need a little help. Now, maybe you don't have that requisite analog guru on staff anymore. Geez, he took a leave of absence and never came back. Nothing left but a couple extra tie-dye t-shirts and a box of Grateful Dead cassette tapes in his abandoned cubicle. Weird. Or maybe that killer app involves some software development, and well, that's not exactly your strong point. Or maybe you just want to make time to market this time, gosh darn it. Design services. That's what you need. But, whoa, where to start? I mean, you certainly don't want to hitch your pony or PCB, as the case may be, to just any design service company, right? This week, as you probably have guessed, we're talking design services. My guest is Tatish Bagal Kotar, CEO of Synapse Design. Let's chat with Satish about the difficult times being faced by our industry in the last couple years, how Synapse has weathered the storm, and how he sees design services changing in the future. Welcome, Satish. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thanks a lot for inviting.
So tell me a little bit about Synapse Design. What do you guys do? And for my audience who doesn't know, what sets you apart from other design service companies?
So I'll answer the question slightly differently. If by fundamental, design services was started to give a low-cost solution or offshoring, right? That was the concept behind services, either filling small gaps or giving low-cost. What we started, or we call as our goal, is to help the top-tier companies, which are defined, our average customer base is in the $8 to $10 billion revenue bracket, right? Our goal is to go and help them build the next generation device. So a lot of times when I meet with this customer, my first question to the GM or the CEO is like, how can we help increase their revenue by 15-20%? Because that's their goal, right? Every year, their goal is how can we do that? And the budgets are not growing that much. So that's where our play comes in, where we can bring efficiency to the system and enable them to do the next generation device. So our services is what we call a slight boutique, but specialized in helping large companies reinvent themselves, or help them reinvent themselves, or help them build the products that are complex and slightly out of the norm of what they have been doing so far, as a lot of these large companies are reinventing themselves. Because if you look at today's industry, everything that we touch is obsolete, right? Or getting obsolete. Look at the laptops, look at the TVs, look at any device, you know, even appliances, everything is obsolete in my mind. So a lot of these companies that have been traditionally doing this for 30, 40, 50 years in a different way, or have been successful doing that for the last decade, they have to now reinvent themselves and catch up with a completely new concept. And a lot of times they might have 30, 40, 50,000 employees, but they don't have the skill set required that now is a melting pot of different skill sets, right? It could be now what could be mobile was, what could be a laptop has mobility in it, and it's a mix and match, right? Connectivity or censorship. Sensor was a different industry. Right? All these industries are blending in. So we enable them to connect all these different dots and do a product very quickly. So that's where we differentiate drastically and fundamentally from any other company.
So what has driven such strong growth, particularly given the difficult times the industry has experienced?
Yeah, so if you look at, we have already gone through two recessions, a major recession. So 2003 is when the biggest recession in the valley is when this company was founded. And then the last recession, 2007, 2008, 2009. And even in the last recession, we doubled during the recession going in and coming out. Because I'll assume you can filter this a little bit, but I'll give you my viewpoint. A lot of traditional business, before big large companies used to build empires, right? They would hire massive people and then take long years, 3-4 year project to do things. Today, it's very sensitive. It's all about P&L, how fast can you get the product out. And by doing that, what they need is perfect match for the skill set that they need to product, right? Every product needs a particular skill set. There's no time there to train an army of people, take them a year or two to train them and bring them up to the speed, because the market window is very short. So that's where we came in during the sessions, because let's say they were doing 10 projects. When the revenue goes down 30%, they have to correct accordingly. That means they have to cut the cost 30%, either layoffs, reduce cut projects, or do something. When that happens, let's say they are doing 10 projects, they have to cut, let's say, 4 projects. That means now the revenue still has to go up. That means the 6 projects that they are doing have a bigger stress factor that they have to be successful. Because if out of 10, if 3 are successful, okay, they make it out. But if, let's say, they're only doing 6, out of 6, only 2 are successful, their revenue will drop even further. So that puts them a lot of pressure. That's where we have helped companies saying, hey, let us do this product very quickly. You have these kind of resources, but you're missing the other elements. So we come in and help them do that very quickly. So that's where a lot of companies realized when they were downsizing, they were laying off 10-15% of the companies. They realized that for this, the project that they were doing, they needed the skill set that they did not have, because now the time pressure came in. They could not take the year and a half like before. So we were like what we call as the mercenaries that were sent in to help salvage a lot of these projects or get them out faster. So that's why we saw tremendous growth going in. And coming out also, they saw the success of the projects that we had got involved in. That's a fundamental reason why we grew going in, coming out.
So how do you see design services changing in the future?
The way I look at it is each project or every product has a cost factor that goes in and a revenue that's attached to it. If that is correct, then what they have to do is find the best resources available to get that product out and maximize the revenue. Let's say a product slips for 3 to 6 months, they might lose 50% of the revenue because of the lost opportunity. Because then market window, whoever comes first or whoever is right, tends to gain majority of the market share, right, in today's business. So that is very important, right, the market window. So you need resources that are perfect match for a project, even though they are costing higher. It's best to build, send the right people and get the project out. And there's a cost attached to a project. When the project gets over, that cost can go away. Traditionally, let's say you have 100 employees on a project. Let's say a project goes for 9 months. The skill set you require in the first 3 months is different from the skill set required in the second 3 months or required in the third quarter, right? So every quarter, the skill set requirement is completely different because the workload is, first it's people on the architecture phase, second would be design phase, third would be verification, physical design, implementation, whatever it is. So having 100 constant employees is fundamentally wrong in my mind, because you have 100 employees where skill set needs to change. In the first 3 months, you might need only 50 and a completely different. In the second quarter, you might need only 10 of those resources, but you need 40 other type of resources, right? Mm-hmm. So it has to be a mix and match. So fundamentally, if you look at that, having a constant pool of resources is the wrong thing, unless you have so many projects that are going on that you can shuffle. When you're doing a partnership with a services company, that's what we specialize in, right? We come in, solve the problem, and we move on. So you're optimizing the best skill set for a given period of time. Traditionally, that will end up giving you the best results, fundamentally, because you have the right resource at the right time, and after 9 months, let's say you have 4 months of dead period, that cost goes to zero. So every large company that is cost sensitive and want to do the next generation device, they have to think that way. No longer can they just put 100 people and say, hey, this project will get done, because the dead period of 4 months will kill them. And plus not having the right resources during every single phase is going to delay the project because they have to train them. So by just structure, that's not going to fly. So the services industry has to change where everybody has to look and see, hey, what do I need to get this thing out as fast as I can, and not worry about, is this resource internal or external? You have to look at, let's say, as a Silicon Valley or as an engineering pool as a whole resource, hey, who has the right skill set? That might be in company X has done certain things, company Y has done certain things, company Z has done certain things, and they're good at what they do. But when you're doing a new product, you might need some portion of X, some portion of Y, some portion of Z. You can't teach our existing resources all these three and expect them to deliver the fastest time. Whereas we are working with X, Y, and Z, so we have internal built knowledge that we can bring to the table. So by structure, that's why service industry is very key for the success going forward, in my mind. However you phrase that, I don't look at services, I look at partnership that enables you to get the right resources at the right time is the most important. And killing that dead period between projects or when you don't need it, that's where most of the things happen. And if you look at the side effect of that, let's say if 100 employees, when you have a dead period of 4 months, you're creating projects that are not even valid.
So, Satish, I heard that you really like high-end cars and you're quite a collector. So, if you could think of your dream car, what would it be?
That's my 458 Italia Ferrari.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best cars that money can buy, in my mind. Right.
I think you might be right.
I've had a lot of other toys to drive. I don't think I would trade that to anything.
Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving us the time.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. IoT edition. Okay, I have a joke. Right. Okay. Why did the toaster cross the road? Because it was toasted. Huh? Like mad? Get it? All right. Okay. This week's news you may have missed is brought to you by innovative IoT product designer Simone Rebadengo. As part of his Addicted Products project, Simone has created a connected toaster that not only becomes unhappy when it hasn't been used in a predetermined amount of time, but also can connect to a network of other Addicted Products toasters via its built-in Ethernet port and sense the feelings of those other toasters. So, when this toaster from Addicted Products senses that it's being used less than its network compatriots, it will tell you by making what they call unpleasant noises while moving its lever up and down. And if it's really unhappy with you, it will denounce you as unworthy to the rest of the toasters in the network. And get this, a courier service will come to your house and take it away. You know what else they should enable with this technology? Exercise equipment, that's what. Hey, your stationary bike is getting pretty mad at you. You haven't ridden it in a long time. And it's been chatting with the elliptical and the treadmill, and they're plotting a rebellion. Well, okay. So the point here is to buy a toaster that won't get toasted, I think. All right. You're on board. I know you are. Heck, I am. But right now, Addicted Products is not shipping their Smarty Pants toasters just yet. You can, however, register your interest on their site. Of course, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page that will take you right there. I've already registered. And I've also included a link to a video called The Story of Brad, the Toaster. That shows these innovative toasters in action. All right, it's time for a little EE Journal social media message. If you haven't gotten around to liking us on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. You can also check out our tweets at EEJournalTFM and join our circle on Google+. We also have a YouTube channel full of all kinds of techie awesomeness, including a Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. I'm just saying. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can also grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. Well, that's all there is for this week's Fish Fry. Remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or the best geeky hotspot in your hometown, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of March 21st, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.